Welcome to CDH's Conversations podcast. My name is Denzel Mhlongo, a candidate attorney in the pro bono and human rights practice based in Cape Town. I'm the host of today's podcast episode, which is a reflection on Freedom Day, with a specific focus on the status of the rights of children in our society and how those rights are protected under our legal system. Today, I'm joined by Brigitte Mangael, a director in our pro bono and human rights practice, as well as Elgene Roos, a senior associate in pro bono and human rights too. Brigitte and Elgene, over to you.
Thanks, Denzel. As you've mentioned, I'm a director in CDH's pro bono and human rights practice. My practice is primarily focused on women's rights and issues with a budding focus on children's rights. Under both of these areas of focus, I'm particularly interested in driving strategic and impact litigation that aims to develop legislation in a manner that allows it to best protect and support the basic human rights of women and children, and particularly in a manner that reflects their lived realities in our country. Our constitution is among the most impressive and progressive in the world. And so it's important that the legislation that flows from our constitution lives up to those ideals and properly protects the most vulnerable members of our society. I'm also interested in hosting legal education and training workshops because I believe that everyone deserves to have a proper understanding of the laws meant to protect them. And this understanding can serve not only as a source of empowerment, but as an entry point to accessing the right to justice. Over to you, Elgene.
Hi, everyone. As mentioned, my name is Elgene Roos, and I'm a senior associate in the pro bono and human rights practice here at CDH. Over the years, I've had the opportunity to work across a range of human rights issues, but one area that continues to stand out for me is forced migration, particularly how it intersects with rights of children. In this space, I've often assisted children whose lack of documentation places them in an incredibly precarious and vulnerable position. Despite the fact that both international law and South Africa's domestic legal framework clearly recognize that children are inherently vulnerable and must be afforded special protection, the reality on the ground tells a different story. These legal protections often don't translate into meaningful access to rights or services for many children, especially those who are undocumented or come from migrant backgrounds. Instead, they remain marginalized and underserved, even in situations where the state has a clear constitutional and legal duty to protect them. It's this gap between legal principle and lived experience that continues to motivate my work. So I'm really grateful to be part of this conversation today as we reflect on Freedom Day and dig deeper into what child rights protection really looks like in practice.
Thank you, Brigitte and Elgene, for your introductions. Brigitte, why don't you start us off by filling us in on what Freedom Day is? What is its history and why do we celebrate it today?
Thanks, Denzel. So as we've just celebrated Freedom Day, this is a good point of departure. Freedom Day marks a turning point in South Africa's history in that it commemorates our first democratic election on the 27th of April 1994. Freedom Day is significant because for 30 years it served to reinforce the fact that all South Africans are meant to enjoy equal status under the law and benefit equally from its protection. Racial, gendered, economic, and political repression were, until relatively recently, the foundation of South African society. To put it into perspective, South Africa has only been free, so to speak, for 30 years of its almost 400-year history since the arrival of European settlers in the 17th century and the beginning of apartheid in 1948. The celebration of Freedom Day is a manifestation of Nelson Mandela's words in his inaugural speech that never, never, and never again shall it be that this beautiful land will again experience the oppression of one by another. Ultimately, Freedom Day is on one hand a recognition of the horrific and destructive injustices that took place in South Africa over centuries, and on the other hand is a commitment to ensuring that those injustices are never repeated and the humanity of all South Africans is upheld and equal. This has been achieved through the enactment of the 1996 Constitution that I mentioned at the beginning and which enshrines the Bill of Rights. These rights are the means through which the rights of all persons in South Africa are guaranteed and upheld.
Thank you so much for that, Brigitte. And on that point about the freedoms guaranteed in the Bill of Rights, it's important to highlight that the Bill of Rights applies to and binds all persons in South Africa. And interestingly, the Constitution makes specific provision for the protection of the rights of children under the Bill of Rights. Elgene, why don't you take us through some of the protections specified for children in the Bill of Rights?
I think it's crucial to begin by recognizing that children hold a special place in our constitutional framework, and this is reflected in Section 28 of the Constitution, which deals specifically with the rights of children. This section recognizes that because of their vulnerability, children require additional and targeted protections beyond the general rights afforded to everyone in the Bill of Rights. Section 28 sets out a comprehensive list of rights that are specific to children. These include the right to basic nutrition, shelter, basic healthcare services, and social services, as well as the right to be protected from maltreatment, neglect, abuse, or degradation. Importantly, it also entrenches the principle that a child's best interests are of paramount importance in every matter concerning the child. This is a powerful and far-reaching standard, one that should guide all laws, policies, and decisions affecting children. What's particularly significant is how these rights interact with broader rights in the Constitution, like equality, dignity, freedom, and security of the person and the right to life. Together, they form a strong legal framework that is intended to shield children from harm and ensure their holistic development. However, and this ties back to my earlier point, while the legal protections look robust on paper, the implementation on the ground often tells a very different story. Through our work, particularly in the forced migration context, we've seen how children who are undocumented or whose families face legal and social exclusion are frequently denied access to the very rights the Constitution promises. Their vulnerability is further compounded by factors like gender, poverty, and systemic inequality. A young migrant girl, for example, may face layers of vulnerability that the system is simply not responding to adequately. We do have legislation like the Children's Act, which aims to give effect to these constitutional protections. But without consistent, inclusive, and compassionate implementation, the gap between rights and reality remains far too wide. So while the Bill of Rights binds all of us and promises a great deal, the real test is whether those promises are truly being delivered, especially to the children who need them most.
Eugene, thank you. Brigitte, given the work you do on a daily basis in relation to children, how much of what the law guarantees to children is actually playing out in reality?
Thanks, Denzel. Yeah, this is a really important question and an important issue for responsible lawyers to address, but also for the everyday citizen to confront. It's widely known that across South African society, the aspirational provisions of our constitution don't automatically lead to an improvement in the material conditions of citizens. So this is what Eugene has just spoken to. There's this disconnect between what we see on paper and what is in fact the lived reality of so many across our country. And this is unfortunate. No different for children. The Justice for Kwekwe movement took off in March in the aftermath of a mother's posts on social media where she detailed the gruesome discovery that her daughter, Kwekwe, had been raped allegedly by the principal of Kwekwe's school. We have actually recently published an alert on this, which I encourage our listeners to access and read. But for the purposes of this podcast, it's important to state that justice has not yet been forthcoming for Kwekwe, despite weeks passing and despite significant uproar in mainstream and in social media. She, like all children, is entitled to be free from physical violations, maltreatment, and sexual abuse. And the state has been astonishingly slow to vindicate her rights after the severe infringement. In that same vein, my practice has been working on a matter where a young girl was groomed and raped by a man who was a family friend, and the NPA, for reasons which escape us, has decided not to prosecute the perpetrator. To date, we've been following up extensively with the NPA to request a comprehensive review of the survivor's case, as there was more than enough evidence to lead to a successful conviction. The state's lethargy in remedying its omission and failure and prosecuting her case exemplifies the gap between the protections the law offers to children and how the institutions of this country oftentimes fail to uphold those protections. While the prevalent culture of violence is a significant threat to the freedom of children, so too are socioeconomic challenges. In 2015, a five-year-old boy named Michael Komape fell into a pit latrine at his primary school, and his deceased body was discovered in a pit of waste. The Limpopo High Court, following legal proceedings, ordered the Department of Basic Education to build suitable toilets at his school to prevent this tragedy from reoccurring. This was 10 years ago, and many of the children of this country who attend school in disadvantaged communities still face the danger of pit toilets. In 2024, the Minister of Basic Education promised that pit latrines would be totally eradicated by the 31st of March this year. The Department of Basic Education, unsurprisingly, unfortunately, failed to meet this deadline, and the minister then stated that pit toilets would be eliminated by July of 2025. All of this is to say that our children remain in a dire situation, despite the ideals of the Constitution and despite how shining and impressive and progressive it is. The reality on the ground for many children is still dire. Socioeconomic inequality and violence against children are but two examples of how the freedom of South Africans' children is hampered. And in many respects, the state's response has not been sufficiently robust in addressing these challenges.
Thanks for that, Brigitte. From this discussion, it's apparent that our legal system envisions state involvement in upholding the rights of children. Elgene, to what extent do you think the state should play a role in upholding children's rights?
Thanks, Denzel. In my view, the state has a constitutional and moral obligation to play a central role in upholding and advancing children's rights. Section 7(2) of the Constitution makes this very clear. It requires the state not only to respect the rights in the Bill of Rights, but also to protect, promote, and fulfill them. When we talk about the rights of children, this means the state must be actively engaged, not passive, in safeguarding their well-being. It is the custodian of the rights of all people in South Africa, and that includes those who are the most vulnerable and least able to enforce their rights themselves, which are our children. In practice, this obligation spans multiple arms of government. For instance, when a crime is committed against a child, the South African Police Service is meant to respond swiftly and effectively, thoroughly investigating the matter and arresting those responsible. The National Prosecuting Authority's Sexual Offences and Community Affairs Unit plays a key role in prosecuting these offences, particularly where they involve women and children. But as Brigitte mentioned earlier, gaps in the justice system persist. Not every report leads to an arrest, and even fewer lead to successful prosecutions. This kind of systemic failure communicates something incredibly damaging, that children's suffering may go unanswered and their rights unfulfilled. That said, there are examples of positive collaborative approaches. The Department of Social Development has developed provincial children's services directories, which are intended to coordinate services between government and civil society, ranging from psychological support to youth care centers and emergency hotlines. These kinds of resources show what's possible when the state takes its duty seriously and works in partnership with others. Importantly, we must also recognize that the responsibility doesn't lie with government alone. Civil society organizations, including NGOs, advocacy groups, and community organizations, play a vital role in not only providing direct services, but also in holding the state accountable and bringing attention to issues that require urgent intervention. The private sector, too, has a critical part to play. As influential actors in society, businesses can contribute meaningfully by investing in initiatives that advance child rights, supporting access to education and healthcare, creating child-friendly corporate policies, and using their platforms to amplify advocacy efforts. A holistic rights-based approach to protecting children demands that all sectors, public, private, and civil, work collaboratively to create an environment where every child can thrive. In the end, children cannot enforce their rights on their own. The law recognizes this, and so must we as a society. If we fail to uphold the rights of children, especially the most marginalized, we send a dangerous message that their freedom and dignity are somehow less valuable. That's why both the state and society at large must act consistently, deliberately, and with compassion to ensure no child is left behind.
Thank you, Brigitte and Elgene, for your insights on this episode. As we reflect on Freedom Day, it's crucial to remember that these are not just commemorative dates in our calendar. They are reminders of our collective responsibility. Freedom Day celebrates the moment we took a monumental step forward in realizing the ideals in our Constitution and in our democracy. But the true test of our commitment to human rights and freedom lies in how we protect the most vulnerable among us, especially children. Their freedom, their safety, their right to grow, learn, and thrive is not just a legal imperative, it's a moral one. If we want to honor the spirit of these days meaningfully, we must ensure that the freedom we celebrate is lived and felt by every child, regardless of their background. Because a society that truly values freedom is one that puts children first, not in rhetoric, but in reality. Let's keep doing the work, holding the state accountable, strengthening partnerships, and ensuring that every child in South Africa grows up in a country where their rights are protected, their voices are heard, and their freedom is real.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.